to talk about rest and again ask some questions as we go along. But first I want to just tell a story of some friends of mine who grew up in eastern Tibet. And as they grew up, they learned farming and they knew how to make houses out of bricks and this kind of thing. But they were also aware of the political situation in Tibet. And when the Panchen Lama died, he was the last sort of homegrown religious leader, even though by many people he's considered to have been a puppet of the Chinese. He was still the last kind of thread of the Tibetan tradition. And so for these women and for other people, they really felt the need to do something to try to keep their culture strong. And they heard about a pilgrimage to Lhasa, where people were going to go from eastern Tibet doing prostrations the whole way to Lhasa, which is a long way. I don't remember how many thousands of kilometers. And so they decided to join this yatra, this pilgrimage. But because it was organized and led by monks, the monks decided it would be too kind of tricky to have lay women and monks on the same pilgrimage together, camping together, and so on. And so this monk who was leading the yatra said that he was really sorry, but only nuns would be allowed to go. And so these women said, okay, then we'll become nuns. Yeah. And he thought maybe they needed to sleep on it. But they really meant it. They weren't just saying, well, we'll become nuns for a few weeks and then once we get to Lhasa, we'll have a party or whatever. And they talked about this as a lifelong commitment. And there are other factors involved because the culture also is like many cultures. Didn't give that many options to women. So it was like get married and take care of the family or become a nun and have education and also go on this pilgrimage. And so almost all of the women decided to become nuns. And there was one girl, 7 years old also, and some older women. Whole range of ages. And so they started on this pilgrimage. And sometimes, just for practical reasons, because it became quite a big group, more than 100 people, they would do the prostrations in one place, counting how much distance they were kind of covering with their bodies, even though they're in one place. And then they'd go get rides and hitchhike in trucks to the next place that would feed them and give them water and a place to sleep. And then do more, like just thousands of prostrations. And I think it's hard to imagine, but we could easily imagine in our own, seeing our own paths where they lead, this kind of country girls who knew about farming, who are starting to travel across Tibet, which the way that they went is very diverse from kind of rainforest with a lot of bamboo and this kind of thing to the normal image of Tibet, the high altitude desert. And in such a political situation with so much tension, they were making a statement. They weren't just expressing their devotion. They knew that they were doing something that was going against the order that was established. And as they got closer to Lhasa, the capital, they heard rumors that the police were tightening down and the police didn't want pilgrims coming in to Lhasa. But they all wanted to go in anyway, and so they were, as usual, hitchhiking in the backs of trucks. And they were supposed to be potatoes. And there were several trucks full of this people from this group. So just potatoes going into the capital. And they were just going through the last checkpoint to enter Lhasa, and someone in one of the trucks coughed. And the whole thing was, the game was up, so to speak. And not only had the police been tightening down, but now they were just trying to sneak into Lhasa. Not only were they pilgrims going from eastern Tibet all the way to Lhasa for some reason, but now they'd been trying to sneak past the police checkpoint. So they ran away. And eventually they ran all the way away to Nepal, having to hike at night. Just imagine crossing the Himalayas at night. So this group of people with not food, not water bottles, not hiking boots, they told me that they had, I think, one needle. And they would pass the needle along the line, whoever needed to, no, not the body, to mend their clothes or their shoes. They would share the needle. Sewing needle. And people were searching for them. They saw that they were being watched, and the Chinese officials were trying to get them. And they finally got across to Nepal, and then they finally got taken to Dharamsala. And then there they were in Dharamsala, so going from Tibet, which is high altitude desert, really, really dry, and so cold much of the time that there's not much bacteria. And then they're not only in India, but they're in the second rainiest part of the subcontinent in Dharamsala. So there's a lot of bacteria. They were getting really sick. All kind of weird skin things happening and stomach things. Not to mention missing their families. So when I met them, they had just arrived in India. And we had a lot of laughs together, me trying to teach them English without my knowing any Tibetan and without their knowing any English or Hindi. And I remember sometimes what they would say was so cute that it would make me smile and laugh, which is terrible for someone who's trying to learn a language. So I'd have to think of some other reason that I was laughing. They knew I was laughing because it was so cute. There were two of us teaching this one group, and they used to say, "I am teacher too, happy." So you can imagine trying not to laugh when they say it. And so luckily, with all of the attention internationally that's been given to this particular political situation, there was money from the Tibetan Women's Association, I think, or something, and the Tibetan Nuns Project to rent a house for them for a while. So they were just, it would be like they were in this room, all of these nuns, all of these girls and women that were dressed as nuns, trying to figure out what they could eat and how to stay healthy, and sneaking letters back to their family when someone was sneaking back across the other way. And trying to learn English. But I remember one time, so these are women who grew up in Tibet, and one time I invited them up the hill from where they stayed to the monastery where I was staying. And we went to the main hall, and just by the entrance to the main sort of temple in the monastery, as almost always, there was a picture of the Wheel of Life. I don't know if you know it, but it shows like the different realms of existence, and the Buddha's off on the side, sort of blessing everyone, but not involved in this repetitive way that we usually live. And there's hell realms and human realm and animal realm and so on. And it's kind of astonishing, but it really seemed like this was the first time they'd ever seen this picture. They were really like, and they were going down like they do when they're with anyone they consider they want to respect. They were just totally, it was like seeing TV for the first time or something. They were just seeing these pictures and And I did know maybe three words in Tibetan. One of them was Sangye for Buddha. And so I could see, I could show them that what there was a little Buddha in each of the realms and also the Buddha outside of the realm. So part of their dream to have sort of more education, a broader exposure than their normal life trajectory would have given them, already started to happen even before more money came. And there's this amazing facility now for these nuns and other nuns where not only their normal nun education happens, but it's also next to a big cultural center, which is to really keep people having access to training in the traditional arts and having debates among different schools and so on. And so they have this really amazing place designed by such and such an architect and all of this. It's really amazing. And when the story kept sort of knocking on my brain and saying, tell me, tell me, tell this story, what really struck me about it mostly was how when we sort of generously give ourselves or we say something needs to be done, and then we find out, well, that means it's a lifelong commitment, and we say, okay, shave my head. I just wanted to make a statement of solidarity with my own culture, but if that means I have to sort of give up my family and my hair, okay. And so we start, and we think we're going to Lhasa, and we don't even get into Lhasa. They never saw the temple there. But they met the Dalai Lama. He gave them a private audience and was like, worth everything. And I think this is who we are. And one of the ways, it's the first time I've seen Iran looking up. One of the ways that I want to talk about this, like really following, even though we don't go to Lhasa, and even though there's not a guarantee that we meet the Dalai Lama or have a really nice facility built for us or whatever. One of the ways I want to talk about this following through is many times we start out kind of, okay, doing our practice. And we think that we know why. We have thoughts and ideas about why. And that's one thing I'd like to hear from some of you, if you feel like. Like, if you found yourself entering the path, so to speak, for certain reasons, and then you see yourself not getting into Lhasa and having to escape over the highest mountains in the world at night. Going somewhere else. So just two things I want to say before I open this up a little bit more. If you've ever worked with watercolor paint, or if you remember when you were little or whatever, or even if you've played with raindrops or whatever, one thing I like to do is use a big brush and put a thin coat of color first, very wet, and let it dry a little bit and then play with the drops that are left. And so yesterday I was trying to see if I could get the drops to go out of the line that they were made with, if they could go out of the brush mark. They didn't want to go out of the brush mark. Even at the edge of the page, like holding it like this, at an angle like this, the page, a really big drop had gathered from the whole page, and it was hanging, like it did not want to drop off. The edge of a page was amazing. So something is needed that's even more fluid than water that can go out of the brush mark. And the second thing I wanted to say was from Jinshin Jutsu, called listening for the harmony. Sometimes, well, I think always, we start to rest, and it's like being in silence, and what we first notice is how noisy the brain is. When we start to relax, we feel how much tension there is. When we start to rest, we feel how tired we are. And sometimes, especially feeling that tension in the body and feeling our helplessness with the tension, how we don't really know what to do once we feel tension. We eventually notice that trying to make it go away makes it worse. And only occasionally can we suggest that it relaxes, and it does. But sometimes we can also feel, there's maybe a few different ways of saying this, or entering through the tension. One is somehow feeling that the tension communicates, that the tension is communicating about the possibility of non-tension. So even the fact that it feels uncomfortable, it's not only that we have this idea that we should be relaxed and we shouldn't be tense that makes us uncomfortable. There's something in the tension itself that's saying, I want to let go. This is not my natural state. Even if it stays in that shape. And maybe just another way to say the same thing, or maybe it's a little bit different. In Jinshin Jutsu, when we listen to the pulses of ourselves or someone else to feel what's happening, how is this system relating to its light? How is it receiving life? And we could say, oh, we're listening to see where is there a problem. Is there a problem in the upper back or in the digestive, or where is there a problem? And that would be the way that we would tend to do it. That would be so much simpler and easier. Even though it's complicated. But really what we're doing is listening for the harmony. The harmony that's behind the tension, the harmony that's speaking through the tension, saying attention is needed here, love is needed here, flow is needed here. So I would love to hear about your resting and falling out of the brush marks and not getting into Lhasa. So first of all, to start with, I'm curious, what is resting? What have you found? Just in a simple way. What is resting?
For me, some kind of resting is not doing the things that I think I should or could do. And lying down.
Okay. Good. Anyone else? That's a little bit like not getting into Lhasa. Or whatever. Anyone else? Petraji?
I don't want to eat anything.
Mm-hmm. And how do you arrive at that, not wanting anything? Okay, it happens or not, but what helps it happen?
If I want not to want something, then again I want something. So, what to do?
But you could live in a way that you never arrive at not wanting anything. So what helps you? It would be easy to live in such a way that we never land in not wanting anything. It would be easy to avoid that place. So maybe there's some things that help for that to happen.
I just check in with the mind what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And if there is a lot of wanting to go into that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Or? Or there's a lot of wanting in the mind, and?
Letting the wanting be.
Mm-hmm.
Not wanting.
Why does that help? Why does that help?
Because it's going to take the skin.
Why does it help to not want the wanting to go away? Is it only tension there? If I don't want the mind to be wanting, is it only like tension and kind of a static situation? Or is there some exchange?
Blank.
So either feeling what is that tension exactly, or feeling, is it just like, tension, I don't want you to want. Or if there's some thing passing between, some energy, by not wanting. In not wanting, is there some passage of energy? Or is it only... Yeah. Okay. So not wanting is a form of focusing and making stronger.
Indeed.
Yeah. Okay.
But also sometimes to make it stronger. Not a good thing.
the drowning and asking for save me kind of method. No, this does help us finally realize, like, there is something other than tension. And the only way is focusing on it to make it stronger so that it falls apart can help us uncover that sort of harmony behind. What else? One more thing that helps. What if you don't try to guess what I'm thinking of, but you feel your experience? I'm not thinking of anything. You didn't sound very passionate.
Yeah, because I find that difficult.
Yeah. That's why I'm asking you. Yeah, so what if we're not talking about focusing or not focusing, but what helps you have more of a chance that you happen to arrive at not wanting? Don't think about the negative. Yes, you do. Can you, what if you describe? If you describe not wanting anything in different words, use some other words to describe. Okay, and another way? Not wanting anything, there's no moment. Okay, so just to be okay. To be happy. What makes you happy? What else? What helps you remember that it's okay? What helps you remember that it's okay? And positive language. Any small thing that helps you remember it's okay, and I'm okay, and everything's okay. Everything is okay.
What sometimes says is the thing, or it's just a thought.
Mm-hmm. I let you go. Maybe. So resting can be another name for everything's okay. Sometimes we happen to fall in there. Sometimes we can help ourselves let go into there by remembering from our experience the power of the thought, like the brushstroke, to keep the color, but that the color could go anywhere. I think I'm coming back to you soon. Passion, passion. What do you love? What do you love? Coffee. And? Okay, good. What do you love?
I like being in a warm pool.
Okay. But that's like, I'm asking love. Okay. So what is resting?
Mm-hmm. There is no tension because before there was tension.
Mm-hmm.
So the change is good.
Okay.
So why we are looking for some, say, sometimes strikes, stay in one place?
Yes, definitely.
Why?
Okay. Does anyone have experience with this? That there's tension and non-tension? So when there's not tension, there's non-tension, because there was tension before. And sometimes we suggest that you stay in non-tension. Sometimes to stay with the tension and let that be a way in. And she's saying why to stay with one or the other is just two things. Like any other duality. Anyone? Chadji?
I think they can coexist.
Okay. Coexist. Tension and non-tension can coexist. Okay. Anyone else?
The non-tension is just like it's warm, so cold things can kind of become more separate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that the non-tension has a quality that's helpful for releasing things that are asking to be released, who are not in their natural state. Anyone else? Mm-hmm, okay. Yeah.
It's like cooking surfaces of water. And non-tension, you flow in the surfaces of water. And then non-tension, you fall.
Mm-hmm.
It's more falling through. And then tension, you go through.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to explain, but it seems like that non-tension can contain the tension.
Yeah.
It's not like typical thing.
Mm-hmm. So the non-tension has also a quality of sort of, let's say, being bigger than. And can also be like everything can be okay even when there's a feeling that something's not okay. That can be okay. So similarly, in non-tension, tension is allowed. And non-tension, we're calling it non-tension for now, let's see, has also a quality of depth. Releasing into depth, so falling into natural, a more natural configuration and place. We'll call it place. Anyone else?
Yes.
Yes.
To stop to ask myself what my body wants to tell me when I'm feeling the tension, and to stop the question and only to be able to look at the tension, because if I have asking myself and put my attention too much in the tension, the tension becomes stronger.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm not sure if I understood totally. I'll try to see what I understood. So feeling tension and not hearing the story about the tension.
Yes.
But just feeling.
Yes, not to ask what is the story behind the tension, what happened to me.
Yeah. but still feeling it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. And often they dissolve. Most of the time, she said. Okay. Ooh. Okay. Yes, good. No, it's not just to train the mind. To train the mind would be like we're going to Lhasa no matter what. So this is more more of a surrender without necessarily having an idea of what my goal is, but more a feeling of being drawn, which you know. And I would say we can call tension and non-tension as, like you're saying, just things that happen, like it's day and it's night every time, one or the other. And so this thing of listening to the harmony is something other than trying to hold on to the non-tension. But it's easier through non-tension to find that. So, but it takes some kind of we'll say for now, direction of energy, which could be called in the category of tension. And first, we can call upon, like through the mind, by saying, okay, it's only thought. Let's not believe the thought. And then the tension is less important, taking up less space. Or we can say, no story, just feel. Or we can start to let life direct. So one of the big transitions that happens by resting through tension and non-tension, tapping into something deeper, but where non-tension is more familiar to this something deeper, is to let go of my idea that we're going to Lhasa. Or to let go of my idea that I want to go on the yatra as a laywoman, okay? All right. I give my whole life to this yatra. That's more like coming to the, my will to join the life, the will of life, let's say. And then once we've done that, it's too late to come back. But we try, for a long time, we stay with thinking that we're driving for a long time. And this is one way that we really abuse ourselves, by thinking that we're driving, trying to drive, when we already gave up the driving. So I would say rest is not equal to non-tension. But this idea of Ariyans, of something that has space for both. What do you experience? Good. Okay. That's perfect. Good. She said, I forget. I asked, what do you experience? And she said, I forget. And I said, perfect. Sorry, one second. The I forget is where this, I stopped driving, even though I might try to sometimes, but really I stopped driving.
Sometimes I
Yeah. Yeah. And it seems to me that you no longer trust me driving, even though that takes over sometimes.
Now I accept that sometimes I need this space for the moment.
Yeah. And then did
you? I want to correct myself. It's not disorder.
Yeah.
But the power of the attention is.
Okay. Okay. So Anandiji is saying, she's correcting herself when she said most of the time the tension that she was feeling dissolves. She said, no, it's not true. But the power of that tension is gone. So like the charge is off, is released. And this is related a little bit to what Petraji was saying. But it's interesting to notice what is it that's the charge of the tension. And often it has to do with thinking that it's not okay. Getting into a state of receptivity for Kelly G is rest. That's what resting is.
For me, it's a kind of acceptance, like accept the feeling that there is tension, that there's nothing wrong with it, it's just a part of what's happening.
Yeah.
And eventually, when you accept this tension, you get into something that is different from tension, which is wider. And you kind of release this tension to, like, to me, that is to give it to the earth. That it's big enough to take this tension.
Mm-hmm.
And to accept the thing that maybe I will not go to, I will not arrive to Lhasa.
Yeah.
And maybe I will not arrive to that Lhasa, but I will arrive on another Lhasa that I don't know, but still it's Lhasa.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Yeah. It's home. Like spirit home. Which is what Lhasa meant for them. Like the center of the whole spirit of the whole country, not only themselves.
But the thing that we think that we already know how we live, no?
Yeah.
So we are looking for that particular thing,
yeah.
But what you don't know.
Yeah. And when we get turned back from that feeling, we think it's the end. Mm. And it's the beginning. So could you hear Juzi? No? Accepting if there's tension, and finding a sense of, for her, the earth is big enough to accept that, to receive that. And then
accept the feeling that maybe I will not arrive to Lhasa.
Yeah.
But I will arrive maybe to another Lhasa that they don't know, but that still is Lhasa, like to give up the idea that I'm Lhasa.
Yeah.
To accept what the unknown is giving to me.
So the side effect of accepting the tension is accepting that Lhasa, my Lhasa, might be different from the one I imagined, my real Lhasa. Someone, yes.
For me, a big part of resting is unmasking.
A little louder, please.
Unmasking, not seeing myself through others' eyes.
Good. Could people hear? You couldn't hear?
Like innocent?
They couldn't hear you.
From the beginning.
From the beginning of your body down here.
For me, a large part of resting, maybe everything, I don't know, is unmasking. Not having masks. To not see myself through others' eyes. Innocence is helpful.
Good. So one thing that can help to come to the place of receptivity or a place of receptivity, maybe taking out that splitting of ourselves where we're watching ourselves as if from outside and coming back to ourselves can help the receptivity. So maybe just to end, I'll just mention another thing from Jinshin Jutsu. Partly because one friend was commenting to me not too long ago that with all of our emphasis on relaxing and resting and receptivity, that maybe Open Dharma is against men. So the women are laughing, maybe hopefully some men are also laughing. And so first, just to say that receptivity has been called feminine, and then we might assume that it's about women. But just really feeling why could it be that in India, the name, as most of you who know us know, because we love to say this, the name for someone who has really come home to their spiritual lasa, their spiritual home, has been called Bhagwan for thousands of years. And Bhagwan means a male, one, who has bhag, vagina. Which has to do maybe with receptivity, but also with giving birth to oneself. If it were, when it's a woman who has given birth to herself, it would be Bhagwati, technically. So Bhagwan. The Bhagavad Gita, like it's for thousands of years back, and Buddha was called Bhagwan, at least in the texts. They translate it as Blessed One, so we can have another meaning about the blessing that we talked about one or two weeks ago. The secret meaning of Blessed One. But just another aspect from Jinshin Jutsu of what is called feminine, which is actually, interestingly, on the right side of the body, unlike many other systems, the right side is associated with the feminine in Jinshin. And the right side is associated with what we can do with what we have, with what we've gotten genetically from our ancestors and so on. What we can, how we can process what we've got. And what that right side, that so-called feminine side, which is receptive in the sense it's to go, it goes with the breathing in, receiving life energy. And so it's interesting, receptive, but what it's really about is breaking down and regeneration. And what we usually do with that is accumulation, building. What we usually do with our capacity to allow things to fall apart and allow what needs to grow up, what we usually do with that capacity is just build on top of and more on top of. Like building on top of the paint, that one paint stroke. Okay, we have to stay within the lines. And maybe just playing with, in our own experience, this breathing in, receptivity, what that can have to do with letting things fall apart, letting the charge come out of the tension, letting the power come out of the tension and be found somewhere else.